With a full tank, we're ready to go the distance. This is The Drive, AM 940 KYNO.
And it's 525 in downtown Fresno. Welcome back to The Drive, and also welcome to Dr. Wade Gilbert. He's a professor of kinesiology out at California State University, Fresno. And in the wake of what happened at Penn State, the Institute for the Study of Youth Sports put out a pretty good primer on what to do, how to investigate or check out your child's coach. And the point was made that some parents spend more time checking out the mechanic that's going to work on the family car than they do the people that are coaching their children. We want to investigate this further with Wade Gilbert, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, we're sure glad to have you on. And I want to start with kind of the Little League situation, you know, baseball or soccer, basketball, Spartan football, those kinds of things. What should parents expect from a coach at that level? Let's say kids 8 to 12 years old.
Well, really, you have to keep in mind that the vast majority of people who coach at that level are going to be volunteers. They're going to be parents. Likely, their kids are on the team. So, you know, you start from there. You understand that they're trying to do a service. They're trying to help. Many times, you know, we're asked to coach, and if someone doesn't step up, there's no team. So it's not like we necessarily get to go out and recruit coaches for that level. So we work with parents who want to help. And then as a parent on that team, if you're not coaching, we should at least expect that that person is in it for the kids, truly in it for the kids. So it's about serving the kids and not serving their own needs. And really, at 8 to 12 in most sports, how much you know about the sport, your technical and tactical awareness is not really that critical. We want to have someone who's there to really for the kids to stimulate their enjoyment and interest in the sport, because we want the kids to come back next year.
And so I'm wondering, though, in the wake of what happened at Penn State, what's alleged at Syracuse University, if maybe Fresno and Clovis area leagues, Sanger, if the leagues will start asking some questions about the coaches, at least to find out what their background is in the sport, whether it's baseball, soccer, football, or whatever, and maybe a little bit about their experience with children and whether, you know, they have some skills or understanding in regard to that. I think that would be appropriate for these leagues to do.
Yeah, I agree. Right now, often there's little or no screening. I myself coached youth soccer for the past couple of years here in Clovis, and you know, you sign a form. They'll ask you sometimes for a fingerprint, or they might do a background check to see if you have a criminal record, which is good, but it usually ends right there. And unfortunately, we don't provide any support to those people who step up and coach. So once you're in, we basically let you go. And even if you have questions or you do want to get better or learn more about this, we typically don't provide you with any support.
And so in regard to coaches that may be pedophiles or act inappropriately with children, I would imagine there's a greater danger of this one where we're talking about travel leagues, kind of the more advanced level, and an opportunity for an adult to be alone with the child.
Yeah, that's a really important point. It's, you want to minimize as much as possible those individual interactions, especially hotels and locker rooms and on the road, like you said. And that does become an issue with travel clubs. And there are guidelines that the Centers for Disease Control and other groups have put out, but I'm not sure how much those, well, my experience, those guidelines aren't discussed typically with coaches. So, you know, we're left to hope that they do the right thing.
So that, what was put out by the Institute for the Study of Youth Sports, though, I thought they had some good ones here. You've talked a little bit about them, and one of them is get to know the coach a little bit on and off the court. And I think a parent can do that and also help the child and the team by volunteering and coming out to practice.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. There's a lot of different opinions on how involved parents should get. And I teach coaching classes, and oftentimes coaches and young coaches say, no parents allowed at my practices. I don't want parents anywhere near my practices or my games. But I always tell them, you have to realize that, you know, once you become a parent, this is your child, you should be invested. You do want them around. You don't want them necessarily interfering with everything you're trying to do, but they should, you know, you should find ways to integrate them into that experience if they want to be part of that.
Well, I agree, and I coached youth baseball for about 15 years, and I had this rule: you can't coach your child during the game. That's the child's performance. It's all about them and their teammates, but you can get as involved in practice as you want. And in fact, I appreciate you coming out to practice because we can work with more kids that way. We can build a lot of camaraderie and have a lot of fun. So if young coaches are saying they don't want parents at practice, to me, that would be a telltale sign that I wouldn't want my son or daughter on that team.
Well, that's what we're trying to teach these young coaches, that, you know, what would be the reason for not wanting parents around? The reason for a young coach is that they think that person's going to get in the way of them being able to realize their athletic goals and mainly winning. And so I help them try and reframe, you know, why are you coaching in the first place? You know, if you're coaching kids, winning's important, but you're there to develop young people. And if a parent wants to help, great.
And my thought on this, Wade, was always this: coach the team to its potential. If you looking at your athletes and they have the potential to be a championship team, you have the responsibility and also the privilege to guide them toward that goal. If you have a team whose potential is to win two or three games, then it becomes more about building loyalty among the players to each other, having fun, and hopefully knocking off a team or two. Sometimes the parents wouldn't understand that or accept it, but that's what I always believed about it, is you coach that team according to its potential.
Yeah, and what we're starting, I agree 100%. What we're starting to see more and more, and what we're trying to do with clubs and schools is help them better articulate and identify what the targeted outcomes are. So what do you realistically expect your child or your young adolescent to get out of this experience? What do you hope they will learn? You want them, obviously, to develop some sports skills, some confidence maybe, being able to connect with other people, interpersonal skills. So there's lots of other things in addition to wanting to succeed on the scoreboard.
And Dr. Gilbert, we need to take a break right now. We'd appreciate it if you'd hold over to the next segment. You're listening to The Drive on AM 940 KYNO.
Get ready to go the distance. You're listening to The Drive on AM 940 KYNO.
And welcome back to The Drive. We're talking with Dr. Wade Gilbert. He's a Fresno State kinesiology professor, and we're talking about the boundaries that should be established between kids and their coaches. And Gail, you had a couple questions for Dr. Gilbert.
I do have some questions. Hi, Wade.
Hi, Gail.
You know, I'd appreciate if you laid out some ideas for me about what is actually okay. Is there any call ever for coaches to be showering with their kids?
I don't see a need for that. No. And that's a good example, because when you may ask some coaches who would say, I don't see a problem with that. We're all in the locker room, or, you know, especially in older age groups. But really, there's no reason for you to be doing that. You can take a shower afterwards.
Absolutely. And there are other things. You know, a lot of these victims are from single parent families. Usually the mom is raising the child. So they're grateful for this male attention and, you know, probably hesitate to ask questions. So, you know, they're led to think, well, this is kind of man's territory. You don't really need to be asking questions here about this. So what would you say are some real red flags?
Well, if you aren't really sure about how your child is spending their time with their coach, or if there's things, you know, we tend to overlook the obvious and the gut feeling and the intuition. If it doesn't seem right or feel right, start asking questions and look into it. You know, there's really no reason for your child to be spending time at a coach's house. You know, there could be group events there where there's other adults around, but one-on-one, it always kind of amazes me when you read these stories and, like, the Penn State situation and these kids were supposedly sleeping over at his house, and I don't know why that would happen. That shouldn't happen.
So that is, like, not normal.
Not in my experience.
You know, I also got in kind of a fierce confrontation with a coach once when my son was playing freshman football over profanity. They're, you know, just outrageous things that we were hearing, even at practices.
Yeah.
What's your feeling about that?
And that's another big one. We have lots of heated discussions on that in our coaching class. I teach one right now. I have 50 students in there, and I'd say it's about 50-50. Half the group would say, no, I don't see any problem. That's just the culture of sport. And the other half think it's atrocious. I'll share you a story. Coach Adrian Wiggins, our women's basketball coach at Fresno State, is a great role model for the type of coach we'd like to see people emulate. And he said once in my class, he came in, he was speaking, and he said, if you want people to do beautiful things, and that's what sport is, it's artistry, it's creative, you should tell them, you should speak beautifully. You should use beautiful words. So there really doesn't need to be profanity. But I'm not really going to spend much time arguing with the coach. You should swear, you shouldn't swear. I'll tell you, you know, the greatest coach maybe of all time, John Wooden, who was a legendary basketball coach at UCLA, was voted the coach of the century, not basketball, not college, but the coach of the century, all sports. You look up any list of great coaches, you talk to any great coach, they'll all come back to John Wooden because he was a teacher, first and foremost a teacher. And he never swore. He did not use profanity. And here's a guy who, most successful, looked up to by everyone, the model to be a coach. And if he didn't have to, why would I?
I love that. I love that. Because a lot of times the people in sports, coaches or whatever, and it sounds like even you as an instructor, they make you feel like, oh, come on, you know, you're thinking like a woman, you know, this is man's world and this is the way we talk. And it's just like that. You need to get over it and get used to it. But it sounds like it's not necessary. And it doesn't have to be tolerated.
No, but sport is emotional. People, and that's okay. And that's good. And it's going to get heated. And that's a beautiful opportunity for teaching lessons, how to control emotions. I think that you'll never really come to a consensus on that one. There's always going to be people who just feel like that's part of their personality. That's how they get their message across. But, you know, pro sports is different. So if you're watching the NFL game or you're watching something on TV or ESPN, that's entertainment. But when you're, you know, high school and below, you have to remember you're a teacher. Think like a teacher. So if I was in math class and kids weren't listening, I wouldn't start yelling profanity at them. That's not appropriate. So why is it okay to do it on the football field or in the locker room?
And I want to make one last point with you, Dr. Gilbert, and that's this whole thing that Penn State and Syracuse, it's a good opportunity for parents to sit down with their kids and talk about boundaries and what abuse is and those kinds of things. And also to further ensure that you have open dialogue and your kids have confidence and feel secure that they can come and talk to you, right?
Excellent point. Yeah, just be involved, be engaged, ask questions. This is another, it's on, you know, it's all over the news. It's a great opportunity to have these kinds of discussions.
Dr. Wade Gilbert, thanks for taking time from your busy schedule today and talking to us on The Drive.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And 5:45 on your commute, we're going to take a break and rehook back up with Tony D.